It's the Marketplace Tech Podcast for Tuesday the 14th. I'm Ben Johnson in New York. If you're selling a successful startup these days, your price tag should have several billion dollars on it. That seems to be the going rate. And smart thermostat maker Nest just got snapped up by Google for $3.2 billion. Nest's CEO Tony Fadell once worked for Steve Jobs designing iPods for Apple. Now his direct boss will be Google's Larry Page. Our friend Nilay Patel at The Verge got Tony Fadell on the phone to talk the Nest acquisition right after it was announced. Nilay says Fadell wants to keep making stuff without having to worry about the resources involved, but the deal might make Nest fans nervous.
The big challenge for him is going to be to manage what he says will be an independent Nest with a relationship to Google somewhere between YouTube and Motorola.
Does this also mean that we might see more Nest products sooner?
I don't know about sooner.
Okay.
Tony's a pretty deliberate guy. His game is to release one really great product at a time and tell people all about it. And I think what they really get out of this is they can do it more aggressively. They can do it internationally.
They can scale faster.
You know, hardware companies are not cheap to run. They have more capital to buy parts, negotiate with suppliers. So there's a lot there in terms of just what raw cash can do for you as a company. And Google certainly has enough of that.
Okay, so we have a sense now of what this might mean for Nest. What does it mean for Google? Is Google starting to telegraph its plans for the future of not just being a certain kind of company and branching out even more and being almost a conglomerate of sorts?
It's interesting. I think the smartphone and the tablet, to a certain extent, have hit a commodity point, and the search is on right now for the next great growth market. And you can kind of see where people are kind of throwing spaghetti at the wall with smartwatches, the endless rumors of some kind of TV from, you know, one of the big companies. But this connected home stuff has equal potential to be the next great growth market. People don't like the stuff they have in their houses. That's why Nest is successful. That's why they're popular. That's why Honeywell immediately sued them.
Right.
The company that owns First Alert immediately sued them when they released the smoke detector. These guys are threats, and they have good ideas about what kinds of devices you should have in your home.
What do you think the pitfalls are for Nest?
The fact that they do have a cadence and they are very deliberate and they are putting out polished products, that's great. That's very Apple-like. But the companies that move faster and they're a little sloppier, they might beat them to the punch a couple of times. And I think the whole point of this is to make sure that doesn't happen for Tony. That's very much what he was telling me on the phone.
Nilay Patel, managing editor at The Verge. Nilay, thank you, sir.
Thank you.
The North American International Auto Show is happening in Detroit all week, and it'll surely feature sweet-looking vehicles rotating under stage lights with amenities galore. Still, a lot of these cars won't represent a giant leap forward as much as an incremental change or two, so I want to talk about an event that did try and put the innovation pedal to the metal. In 2007, the XPRIZE Foundation announced it would give $10 million to anybody who could make a car that would go 100 miles on a gallon of gas or the energy equivalent. The story of the race that followed that announcement is told in a new book, Ingenious, a true story of invention, automotive daring, and the race to revive America. Jason Fagoni is the author. Jason, thanks for joining us.
Hey, Ben.
Can you tell me what was unique about this XPRIZE competition?
So it was a $10 million competition to create the super efficient car of the future, and they had to perform well on real-world tests.
What kind of tests?
Tests of braking, tests of acceleration, tests of maneuverability. The cars had to get 100 miles per gallon equivalent, so really, really tough.
And for whatever reason, that inspired a lot of people to really go for it.
That's what captivated me about this contest. I should say I'm not really a car guy. At the time I reported this book, I was driving a 2002 Honda Accord with 120,000 miles on it. But when I heard about the contest, the cool thing to me was that it was open to everyone, not just the big automakers, but also little guys.
Tell me about the Hybrid X team.
This is a team of students and teachers at a public high school in a rough neighborhood in West Philadelphia. They built two hybrid cars. One of the cars was like a Chevrolet Volt on the cheap. It was based on a Ford Focus that they modified to use a Harley-Davidson motorcycle engine and an electric motor. This was like the loudest Ford Focus ever created. And it ended up getting 63 miles per gallon, which is very impressive.
But there's, of course, teams that come from the opposite side of the spectrum, right?
Sure. So I followed one team called Edison 2 that decided that instead of building an electric car, they were going to focus on something more fundamental, which was lightness. So the car ended up weighing about 800 pounds. You could actually push it across the floor with your thumb. It was so light. And it was so efficient that it ended up getting 102.5 miles per gallon equivalent.
What did you learn about the car as a technology?
There are huge opportunities for cars to be drastically better. When I look at traffic now, I tend to see sort of a gray waste. Normal-looking cars are somehow wanting to me now.
So are there systemic challenges to innovation, you think?
This contest really for the first time showed that practical efficiency is possible and that the auto companies can do a lot better and we should be demanding more from them. They are investigating sort of new kinds of propulsion systems, but for the most part, they are going to be installing those in old architectures. They're sort of bolting the future onto the bones of the past. And it's because automakers are extremely conservative. They fear consumer rejection. They fear radical change. But we need radical change because the cars of the 21st century can't be like the cars of the 20th century.
Jason Fagoni has written about science and culture for the New York Times Magazine, GQ, Wired, The Atlantic, and more. He's the author of Ingenious. Jason, thank you.
Thank you.
Before we go, one more bit of acquisition news. Facebook has bought Branch and Potluck. Both platforms, used for having long invite-only conversations online, were run by Branch Media, based here in New York. The people behind those companies will now help run the new and mysterious Facebook Conversations group. Talk ain't cheap in the tech world, I guess. The deal, reportedly worth $15 million. I'm Ben Johnson, and that's Marketplace Tech. This is APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.